B-Pod Studios.
And now, I'm just trying to spell it out for the listener.
Felger and Mav.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mav.
Q-U-I-T quit.
Okay, thank you. No, spell up for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's hour number two, Felger and Mav. Murray and I from Town Fair Tire Studios here in Dorchester. The Reentry Monday is presented by East Boston Savings Bank. Presenting sponsor Felger and Mav on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston remains DraftKings. Murray, you think the Patriots are working off a master plan this offseason or a little bit more by the seat of their pants?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. It's the seat of their pants. This whole thing feels like a scramble for the NBA and NHL to try to, you know, salvage their seasons. That's how it feels for the Patriots right now. Like, do they really know who the quarterback is going to be? Do they trust Jared Stidham? Are they going to maybe trade Stephon Gilmore? I know you're going to get into this Ben Volen column, but the whole thing just feels like, nah, we'll figure it out.
Okay. And I think most fans feel that way. Not all, but most feel that way. And so I think the team is starting to push back on that. I think they're starting to push back on that. And I can tell team propaganda when I read it. I've been on all sides of it, so I'm uniquely qualified. I've been on the program, off the program. I know it. I know it when I see it. And this is not to disparage anyone who's reporting it, but it is what it is. When I read Andrew Callahan in the Boston Herald on Saturday, I guess he posted it on Friday, but you know me, Murray.
You need the tactile paper. You sanitize that first before you read
still,
it?
Well, you know, that's a good point.
Quick, spray it down.
as I put the hand sanitizer on, Andrew Callahan writes on Saturday in the Herald, Pat's plan coming into focus. He says, in retrospect, the Patriots' first major moves revealed everything. Hours from the unofficial opening of free agency 2 weeks ago, safety Devin McCourty re-signed. Then minutes before free agency started, the Patriots beat the buzzer by placing their franchise tag on Joe Tooney. Combined, those two moves cost the Patriots almost $38 million and soaked up most of their cap space. It was a silent sign their other high-profile free agents would not return. And sure enough, Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins took off later that night, and the next day, Tom Brady announced he was leaving New England. So where does that leave the Patriots now, he says? Right on schedule.
Oh. Yeah, that's a line that reeks of old propaganda right there.
Right on schedule. He says, while not every free agent pursuit went as planned last week, the Patriots stand firmly on the new ground they've broken without Brady. For better or worse, this is where they have chosen to be. Ready to kneel out free agency with pocket change for cap space, most of their roster holes filled.
What?
And a few still to address, likely via the draft. Do they have most of their roster spots filled?
Who the hell do they have at linebacker besides Dante Hightower right now?
Okay.
So no, absolutely not.
Give me another.
Wide receiver and tight end.
Okay. Tight end is kind of glaring. Receivers, they might have some guys.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so if you say they are all their other roster spots filled other than tight end and
who's
linebacker?
Your kicker?
Okay, three. Thank you, kicker. Kicker, tight end, linebacker. They have nothing. I mean,
literally like nothing.
Very little. Receivers, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, half. I'll give you 3.5 there. Is there another roster need?
Well, I mean, do we know that Stidham's the guy? Is quarterback set? Seriously.
I don't know. Quarterback? Anyway, Andrew Callahan writes, the Pats' plan for their franchise-defining offseason developed over several months. It's finally coming into focus. He says, okay, so this is there's some money lines in here. Upon first glance, he writes, it's easy to assume the Patriots, now without a quarterback or cap space.
Kind of important.
I mean, they don't have a quarterback or cap space, but it's easy to assume that because they don't have a quarterback or cap space, the Patriots must have chosen to enter a rebuild. Truthfully, though, the motivation behind these moves is no different than any others made at one Patriot place. Because in Foxborough, one reason drives everything, every signing, release, trade, draft selection, or practice drill, pass, tackle, run, and rep. You know what that is, Murray? Winning.
The only thing missing from that is the snort and the grunt.
It's a little thick, isn't it? In 2019, McCourty and Tooney represented the strengths of a Super Bowl contender that faded down the stretch due to injured weapons and waning quarterback play.
That's a shot.
Woo! This is when I knew I was what I was reading.
Here's what I want you to write.
In 2019, McCourty and Tooney represented the strengths of a Super Bowl contender that faded down the stretch thanks to injured weapons and waning quarterback play.
Ooh. It's a shot, but it's a, that.
There's a shot.
But that word, it's still not as harsh as it could be. You know, like it's, well, you know, because you can make a case for waning.
Waning,
but it's still, that's a shot.
Waning quarterback. So is that why the team faded down the stretch?
No.
Because of injured weapons and waning quarterback play? Aren't you leaving on a third component?
Yeah, your defense got exposed and was wildly overrated.
Didn't basically the defense fall apart at the end of the year?
How about that?
Giving up game-winning drives to Ryan Fitzpatrick and getting shredded by a running team in Ryan Tannehill? Are we going to mention that? Instead,
no,
it's because
the Bills built that defense.
It's because of injuries, which aren't our fault. You know, we had the right weapons. They were just injured. And, oh, yeah, the quarterback kind of stunk down the stretch, too. Ooh, I like it.
Ugh.
I mean, I think it's so them. Callahan writes that the Pats boasted the NFL's sharpest secondary all year. In the second half, their top 10 offensive line, with left tackle Isaiah Wynn finally back in the fold, reached its peak. Six of the offensive line's seven best pass protection performances occurred after November 1st, according to Pro Football Focus. On these strengths, the Patriots have chosen to double down in 2020. Rather than paper over their obvious weaknesses with a couple of overpriced replacement-level weapons via free agency, this is their plan. All right, so, I mean, basically, it's simple now, right? Their pass defense was the strength of the team last year, and so they doubled down, keeping Devin McCourty, keeping his brother. We'll see what happens with Gilmore. We'll get to that in a second. But they've kept their secondary intact, and their offensive line, wouldn't you know,
it was actually a strength last year.
Six of the offensive line's seven best pass-protecting performances occurred after November 1st. And the key, as he writes later, in modern football, Murray, what's more important, tackles or guards?
I'm guessing guards is what he's going to make the case for.
I always thought it was tackles.
Yeah, I always thought the left tackle, that was a pretty marquee position in the NFL.
Mm-mm. Stopping interior pressure is paramount in the modern game, writes Callahan. Particularly for offenses led by young quarterbacks. Edge rushers can generally be schemed away via chipping or cut blocking, double teaming, rushing at them, running play action passes away from them, etc. The Patriots have neutralized edge rushers for years. Elite defensive tackles, on the other hand, are more difficult to counteract. Enter Tooney and center David Andrews and right guard Shaq Mason.
Who sucked last year.
All top 10 players at their respective positions. Provided Andrews returns and reports are positive, the Patriots could own the best pass-blocking interior line in the league.
So, Bill, I mean, Andrew Callahan is now going to try to make a case for the right side of that line, specifically Shaq Mason, who was either hurt or just flat sucked last year, had a good season. That last part of that is, actually, that just gave me the sting, because that is a, again, that's a way of saying the offensive line was actually really good last year, and any issues that the offense actually had was the old quarterback who was, and I quote, waning. Ooh. Oh. Oh, F you. Oh, man. The line sucked. And a lot of that had to do with injury. But it wasn't that good last year. And now they're going to try to make a case. Andrew is going to try to make a case that the offensive line was a strength for the Patriots last year.
He writes, keeping Tooney ensures the Patriots can protect Jared Stidham at a high level, a vital task they face this season. Last year, Tooney's pressure rate allowed, of 2.5% trailed only Marshall Yanda and Richie Incognito among guards, who took at least 250 pass-blocking snaps per pro football focus. So, the key now to offensive line plays the interior, not tackles, and they have the most expensive interior in the league, just about, you know, right? Between Mason
and Tooney
is like $25 million.
Right.
And Andrews is more reasonable, but the strength of their offensive line is in the middle, which is where it needs to be. The strength of their defense is the secondary. That's how they were a contender last year, and they would have been a contender if they hadn't had injuries at their weapons and their quarterback play didn't wane. And they've just doubled down, and that's how they're going to contend this year, in the secondary, in the middle of the offensive line.
Okay.
You buying it?
No, I am not. No, and a lot of those stats that the secondary put up, specifically some of the interception numbers by Devin McCourty, who had a great season last year, it's because you played suck quarterbacks in an easy schedule. You pumped up your stats in those first 8 weeks when you were 8-0.
So Callahan writes, They didn't have the money to splurge on top-tier receivers or tight ends, so they invested in defending them. Understanding that after elite quarterback play, a shutdown secondary ranks as the most valuable commodity in the NFL. Do we agree or disagree with that? After quarterback play, what's the most important facet of NFL football? It might be defending the pass.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be. I don't know if I'd say secondary, but some sort of linkage of pressure and coverage.
I've always been like, you know, quarterback, that's a given. And then the second most important position is a shutdown corner. And then a left tackle, like, you know, the best left tackle you could possibly have. Apparently it's a guard. Shame on me. That's what you really want to have, is a left guard, right guard. And that's no knock on Tooney, who I really do like, and I didn't mind that they put the franchise tag on him. He never misses games. He hasn't missed a game in 3 years. He's been solid. Is he overpaid? A bit, but market dictates the value.
So this is how, what they think happened last year is that...
What spin? Holy crap, I'm dizzy.
Is that their weapons got hurt, and they suffered through waning quarterback play. And if not for those things, they had the defense and the offensive line to go deep. But the quarterback was waning, and the weapons got hurt.
Shredded by Ryan Fitzpatrick. Not just, it was a fluke play, and they shredded.
No mention of that defense that faded down the stretch and lost key pieces.
And ooh, the boogeymen. Ooh, no, because Bill put that together. That's what Bill truly cared about, was that side of the ball. That's why you're not going to hear anything bad about the defense in 2019.
Tremendous bit of old school propaganda. Love it. The team's engaged, and they're putting out their message. That's their message right there. There it is. That's why they didn't contend last year. The weapons got hurt, and they suffered waning quarterback play. The strength of the team was the secondary and the offensive line, so they reinvested in that. They brought it back, and that's still the strength of the team. If they can keep their weapons healthy and not get waning quarterback play, they're right back in it, and they contend.
I'd take waning quarterback play more than unknown quarterback play. I don't know. That's just me.
Okay. Meanwhile, someone on the globe keeps trying to trade Stephon Gilmore. How does that jibe with reinvesting in the secondary? That story and your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Five, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mez.
Second down.
That's a good defensive play.
And 10. There was a guy who wore number 21 for the Patriots with a saving interception in an end zone to our right several Super Bowls ago.
Now here.
Goff with three to the left. Takes the snap. Harmon on a blitz. Goff throws it to the right. Gilmore's there. Yeah. Intercepted at the four. Harmon forced the pick. And Gilmore comes up with it. His second of the postseason.
What a call.
And possession of the Patriots.
What a call by Brian Flores. Pressure on number 16. You knew the kid was going to crack, and he did there. And what a play by Gilmore.
The Stephon Gilmore highlight. He's your best player.
Yeah, without question.
He was your best player last year, right?
Yeah, I'm a defensive player of the year. I didn't think he was that great in Miami against Miami that last game, but overall it was a great season for him.
He may have faded a little bit like the defense, but he was your best player last year. I think he's your best player right now, isn't he?
Yes.
Is anyone close?
Nope.
So he's easily your best player. And the Pats have no cap space. And Ben Volen keeps wondering if Stephon Gilmore could be on the way out. Volen wrote in the Globe today, are the Pats going to shed more salary after letting Brady go and letting Van Noy go and Collins go and trading Jerron Harmon and letting Steven Gostkowski go? All those guys left. And unlike Callahan, he says they still have plenty of roster holes to fill. Okay, they do. they let all that money go. They only have $1 million in cap space, and they have all those roster holes to fill. Never mind draft picks to sign. So how are they going to do it? They got to trim some more money. So they either have to release, restructure, or trade among a group of Stephon Gilmore, Julian Edelman, Dante Hightower, Joe Tooney, or Marcus Cannon. On Gilmore, he writes, because of previous contract restructures, Gilmore has the highest cap number among all NFL cornerbacks at $18.67 million, and that's the highest on the Patriots. So he's your highest cap number on the Patriots. He's got the highest number of any cornerback in the league. It's also because the cap is crap and these contracts are so goofy and you can do so much stuff with the money. It's also significantly higher than what he's actually making, which is $11 million. He makes $11 million and is due $23 over the final 2 years of the deal. Gilmore has the second highest salary on the Patriots, but will make significantly less than the $15 to $17 million the top cornerbacks make in free agency. Gilmore, as the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, deserves to be paid at the top of the market. He hasn't made his contract an issue, but I'm keeping an eye on it, says Volan. So that is like, that's the worst of all worlds, in that his cap number is high, which you hate, but his real money is low, which he hates. It's like, so
something has to give there. It's either a restructure or maybe they consider trading him.
Like, it doesn't work for either side. The Pats want to get that number down, but he want, you know, that's like the worst of both worlds. Volan writes, I do believe the Patriots should consider trading Gilmore. A perfect candidate for Bill Belichick's trade a player a year early instead of a year late ethos. Gilmore will be 30 this fall. Again, he has 2 years left. And the Patriots have excellent depth at corner with J.C. Jackson, Jonathan Jones, Jason McCourty, and Juwan Williams. Do they have excellent depth at corner?
I like Jackson a lot. Williams is an unknown. He mostly played on special teams last year. So
How could you put Juwan Williams on that list?
Yeah, we don't really even know.
And did he just get busted for drugs in the offseason? Yeah, was that him or was that?
Yeah, it was weed. Right?
I thought he did.
I think it was, yeah. Yeah, it was.
So who knows what his...
Yeah, because he went to Tennessee. It was weed and...
Juwan Williams.
Yeah, Percocets.
I don't know what his situation is, but I mean, I don't put him on that list of the excellent corners.
No.
Like I'd say...
It's a question mark.
He's a question mark or a potential guy. I like Jonathan Jones. He was exposed a little bit last year. J.C. Jackson I like. Jason McCourty feels to me like just a guy.
Right.
It's a good cornerback group, but I don't think it's excellent.
The depth is not excellent.
I think Gilmore makes it excellent. Anyway... Trading Gilmore would undoubtedly make the Patriots worse in 2020, but think of the smorgasbord of picks Gilmore could net for a team that is likely rebuilding for the next couple of years. Oh, wait a minute. So now we're rebuilding the next couple of years? I'm not doing that. But anyway, the Rams gave up 2 first-round picks plus a fourth rounder for Jalen Ramsey last year. If the Patriots can get a plunder of picks that includes a first rounder, they should jump all over it. I ask you, Murray, if someone offers the Pats a first-round pick for Stephon Gilmore, should they do it?
Just one? No. No, the precedent was set with Jalen Ramsey, who he mentioned, whose play I think is kind of down, 5 years younger than Stephon Gilmore, but traded for 2 firsts and a fourth. Gilmore is better on and off the field, reigning defensive player of the year, so you can't just take a first. It has to be two for him. And if it is rebuild-ish, which it feels like, not full rebuild, but rebuild-ish, if they can get that kind of haul, they should consider it.
2 first-rounders? Yes, sure. Yep, because that's just a...
And he'll be 30? Like, that's truly getting out a year ahead.
Okay, so, but, I mean, I file that under two, you know, you've made me an offer I can't refuse. It's just too good to refuse. 2 first-rounders? Yes. But just one? I don't know. I still want to contend this year. I still want a season.
Yeah, I wouldn't. No.
I still want a team. Volan says he wouldn't re-sign him, because that's another way to knock down the cap number, is to give him a bunch of more money up front, extend him out, and then push those numbers out. He says he wouldn't do that. I'd consider it. I mean, he's your best player. And I do think, you know, whether I agree with Callahan or not, that your secondary is the most important thing in football other than quarterback play. I do think those elite corners make a world of difference for a defense. I just think they're such difference makers. And he's that guy. You know, not that I could realize it when he got here, but he's turned into that guy. So, I don't know. I still want to win games next year. I still want a season. So, this is not a yard sale. So, unless someone gets stupid and gives me the Jalen Ramsey package, I'm not trading.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. One's not enough. Because, again, reigning defensive player of the year, he is their best player. I mean, he's basically like the face of the franchise right now, at least to me.
Okay, so there are your Patriots thoughts. We can also weigh in on pessimism over the return of sports. That's how we started, and we can continue that conversation as well. Let's bring it back with Gabe in West Roxbury. Go ahead, Gabe.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good,
real quick, I just want to talk. I thought the plan was more that this year they're going to see how Stidham is, and then after this year they're going to have a lot of cap space depending, you know, obviously they're going to re-sign a couple guys. They're going to drop a lot of guys and have a lot of cap space and hopefully try to, you know, rebuild a new team from there. So, I thought that was more the direction they were going in.
Right, so that's true, Gabe. The thing is, they have approaching $90 million in space or something next year with Stephon Gilmore on your books. with all these guys on your books. This year's the year that you're clunky.
It's tight, yeah.
Okay, but next year it opens up even with these guys still on the roster. So this is not a rebuild year. This is not a go back to the bottom of the league kind of year. I'm not doing that with Bill Belichick as my coach. And if I'm doing that, why am I paying Joe Tooney $14.5 million guaranteed dollars and bringing back Devin McCourty? Why would I just, you know, and I think they're telling you, they're not going to the bottom of the league. So you, and I also don't want to do that to Stidham. I think you hurt Stidham's development if you sell everybody and now you're 4-12 and the kid doesn't stand a chance. Give him a chance, see what you got, compete, you know, and that's my approach.
Yeah, and that's the one part of the plan that I do think is real, and that putting the franchise tag on Tooney, ostensibly Andrew's going to be back and be healthy. Like, the offensive line is going to be good, and it will protect Jared Stidham. Plus, you get the expanded playoff field next year. Like, will it be 12-4, 11-5, them falling out of bed? No, that's going to be different. But they could squeak in at 9-7.
And that's what I want.
I think that's what the plan is.
And that's what I want the rebuild to look like. You can still rebuild going 9-7. Yeah, just hit on your pick at 20 overall versus 5 overall. That's all. And you have all the room that you need.
Just don't take a wide receiver.
Money-wise. and rebuild from the middle. You can do that in the NFL. Pete in Delaware on the return of the NFL and college football. What do you think, Pete?
Hey, guys. Well, first of all, let me just say that I applaud Roger Goodell, which I never do, but not having NFL free agency would have been a nightmare, because having it was great. The past few weeks, we've all been able to call the radio station and get into that conversation. I can't imagine what it would have been without it. Moving forward, though, guys, Kirk Herbstreit, who is on ESPN, who, you know, does college football, he's doubting it's going to come back for football. And I know we don't have the stats, but don't you think that's going to be the toughest league if they don't have a vaccine by then, because just of the number of players they have to deal with on each roster and everything that goes with it to bring back versus like the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's all hard. I mean, I don't know, the thing we're talking about with the NBA, which I want them to do, but, you know, a bubble city and a quarantine zone and, you know, safe zones with a few teams and around, I mean, that seems like a massive undertaking. That's hard enough as it is. I don't know if playing NFL football in empty stadiums is any harder or worse. I think it's all hard. But I think if any sport is going to push it, it's the NFL.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so, and they've already let you know that they're going to push it as much as they can, with the ginger hammer saying last week, shut up or you're going to get fined.
Not only are we going to continue to do these things, off-season draft, we're doing them, and if you say anything about them, I'm going to fire you.
Right.
So they are by far the most serious. They have the most money at stake, and I don't mind it. It doesn't offend me that they're trying to conduct business. Everyone should be trying to conduct business if you can do it. If you can do it, if you can do it safely. And if you can't, you can't. Back to your phones after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mere cup, but you are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay him.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We continue with your phones as promised. It's Felger and Big Jim Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios here in Dorchester. David in New Bedford. Hi, David.
Yes. I was wondering what you guys thought of the comments by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers GM today. On the midday show, they had a clip of his comments, and he was talking about how Tampa was not originally into Tom Brady, and that Tom Brady was the one that called Tampa interested in playing for them. I found that fascinating, that the team usually calls a player the show interest.
Sure.
But Tom was the one that ended up calling Tampa.
Okay, so
how does that change the perception on Tom Brady?
You don't quite have it right. They liked Tom Brady. They were looking at Brady. They were interested in Brady. But when the call came on Wednesday, they were surprised that Brady was so active. that Brady was pitching them as much as they were pitching him.
Pitching. It was, get me out of here. Okay. I need someone. You guys are the only ones remotely interested. Help. So,
there's a little something to that. It's not like he called them out of the blue soliciting the job.
No, and Light talked about what they had seen on film. They still showed that, you know, still showed that they liked his arm, his mobility. They thought he'd be a good fit for Bruce Arians' system. So it wasn't a cold call. Okay.
But generally speaking...
yeah, generally speaking, that doesn't really happen.
No, but Brady pitched him, and Brady was strong.
Yeah.
Brady was strong. Come get me. I want to leave, you know. And I think that that's true, and I think it's telling. I think it's telling how badly he wanted out,
yeah.
How badly he wanted an offer, any offer that he could live with to get out of here.
That's got to sting a little bit for Patriots fans, because it wasn't just, because it's free agency. The teams typically chase the player, and, you know, Tampa Bay was interested, but Brady really wanted to put that over the finish line. Help me. Send me a line. I need to get out of here. Like that's a tough pill to swallow.
And it tells you again how badly he wanted out from Bill. And that's not to say he wouldn't have stayed, but as had been reported by, you know, people who followed his camp for months into a year, something would have had to have changed. Bill would have had to have changed his tune, and the quality of their offers would have had to change, and it never did. And so he was desperate for any sort of legitimate offer that he could live with. And so he pitches the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He had to pitch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
It is beneath him.
Ooh. Oh, God. Chris and Bear, I think it's Bear. Barry, on the return of sports as I fumble around here. Chris, go ahead. Christopher.
Oh, hi. Thanks for what you're doing. I really appreciate your ideas and keeping us distracted. Given that the bubble idea is going to take a while, even under the best circumstances, I had a thought about what to do in the meanwhile. I would like to see more classic replays of games with new live color commentary from players and key media people that could be produced remotely. You could have the people calling in and adding to it.
Yeah.
It could have a live aspect in the fact that the players would be commenting live. And I think that would be really entertaining and a good distraction until we get anything else worked out.
Not bad.
Sold. I'm into it. Because I have a hard time with some of these games that I've digested. And so, like, the 28-3 game, a lot of people, Zoe was tweeting about it yesterday. Like, I've now seen that game, including being lucky enough to be there live, like, five times. Like, I've seen it all. I know what's coming. Like, I don't know. That's the good thing about sports, right? Like, the unknown and the unpredictability of it. If you had the players at hand that were involved with the game or some of the coaches basically doing, like, the DVD commentary, I'd be into that. That'd be kind of cool.
So NBC Sports Boston has done something like this. They've replayed some old Celtics games. And didn't they have Scal and Danny Ainge last night talking about Jordan's 63-point game here in 86?
Yeah, Friday night they played game six of 08 against the Lakers, and afterwards it was Scal and Paul Pierce. It was pretty cool. You know, it's a little choppy because it's Skype, but we're all doing what we can to put out content, and it was good. It was compelling stuff.
So do it during the game.
Right.
Do it during the action. Last night, I've told you, I'm not good at watching old games either. I'm not really my forte. Maybe I was just so freaking horny for it last night, or just so desperate for something. I did watch Bruins Leafs Game 7 2013. They had that on NBC Sports, the NBC Sports Network.
Yeah.
So it wasn't our call. It wasn't the Bergeron. It was whoever was doing the game for NBC Sports. They had the call. And then right after that, they played that amazing Vegas Sharks Game 7 last year with Pavelski.
Oh, yeah.
They were up 3-0 and he got hurt on the faceoff, and then they scored four times on that power play. That thing. And, it got me for about, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. I sat there and watched it. That's how desperate I was for these games. And so, right, if for that Bruins-Leafs thing, you could have had Bergeron live with Gosher or whoever sort of going over, like, this is what we were looking at. This is what the play was. This is what we were trying to do, and sort of talking over the game. That's something.
Yeah, especially if you could get players that were involved that have a big personality and that aren't afraid to take shots. Like, they talk about the collapse, or they see Reimer pee in his pants and they knew that they were going to be coming back. Like, you get that kind of stuff, I'd tune in.
Right, exactly. Well,
take that, Reimer, you bum.
Right, if you get Lucic on there.
Yeah, me and Lucic, we'll do it together.
After, so they scored twice in the last, like, 90 seconds. Horton.
Woo!
Horton scored earlier.
There it is.
Then it was Lucic and Bergeron. If Lucic says, yeah, we saw it in his eyes. Because they did. Like, one thing I totally forget, they tie it, And then with like 10 seconds left, they come in on a break, and Reimer lets up this awful rebound right onto Peverly's stick. And Peverly's right there, dead to right, top of the crease. Like, grade A scoring chance. 10 seconds, 5 seconds left, and of course he whiffs.
Yeah.
He blows a scoring chance. But Reimer, oh, he was such a mess.
Oh, he's a puddle.
Oh, they tied it up! That was a good one. So I did that got me last night. And I just watching those snippets or the portions that I watched, the pace, the speed of that game, which just sort of made me think about this now about them coming back. They have to do some sort of little regular season
ramp up
or week-to-week ramp up preseason, mini season, play-in, regular season wrap up something.
Because not only will it look like a mess, you're risking injury. These guys are the shape they were in weeks ago.
Not even close. But so that's what we're reduced to, watching those replays and trying to figure out good ways to program the replays.
That's a good idea, though. Having some of the players or coaches involved, maybe with a media guy, and doing like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 with it. You're just watching and commenting as it goes.
The return of sports and Patriots offseason. The two items on the table. Back to you in our long commercial-free segment right after this.
Get in!
Who got it?
Bergeron.
Duggar has sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Mazz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Mazz.
A great show.
98.5 to Sports Hub.
105 remaining. Third period of game seven. The Bruins down by one. Blue Jays behind the Leafs net. Morton trying to work it loose. Blue Jays right corner. Yager right wing boards. On Bergeron. Left side to Krejci. Bergeron straight away with a wrist shot and he scores! Patrice Bergeron ties the game with 50.2 seconds left! Up ahead, out of Patrice Bergeron. Over the blue line to the right circle. Bergeron driving wide. Takes it in behind the net. Out of the left wing circle. Drops it off for Sagan to the bottom of the circle. Spins and puts it on net. A stick save, Reimer. Boychuk right side. A wrist shot blocked.
Reuniting Sagan with this line here.
And Bergeron a one-timer. Save Reimer. Rebound loose at the top of the crease. Richard score! Bergeron! In game seven! And the Bruins win the series!
Wow. Holy. Oh, I want to. Ah! Holy. Wow. Huh?
Yeah, that was a good one. Got a little bit of that last night. And I'm not a rewatch sports guy, but what can I tell you? Want to play Murray's whole reaction just for bleeps and giggles? Okay, yeah, we have a Fuppets, but that's edited too much. Let's do Fuppets at the end of the day. How about just the raw radio, because it's in all of its glory. And again, if you haven't heard this, Big Jim Murray, before he joined us, this was obviously in April of 2013.
Correct, yeah.
Was you did nights on sports radio in Atlanta.
Yep, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. every night.
So you're alone.
Oh, my God. I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
Yep. Yeah.
So you're alone. You're doing your night show in Atlanta.
Yeah.
About to ask a question about Tiger Woods?
Yes, yeah.
And the game's on and you're watching the game, obviously.
Yeah, basically half-assed in my job because it's who really cares about local sports down there? So it was more of a national thing. Talking about Tiger Woods, was he back at the time? I was like, okay, this is what I'll open with. Monologue on that while having one eye on game seven. And so this is what happened.
Let me just start off by saying this. If you're not watching Game 7 playoff hockey, you really have no idea what you're missing. This what's going on right now at the Bruins-Toronto game in overtime, going on in the background here. This is everything good about sports. You don't necessarily have to be a fan of either of these teams. If you just like
sports and everything that's great about it, competitiveness. This is where it's at, and just the high drama. And tonight you get the Bruins down 4-1, and half that half of the Boston Garden filing out of that place in anger when it was 4-1 early in the third period. And then they storm back with 3 goals to tie it late in the third, and now the place is bedlam for those that stayed. And there's 15 and change left in overtime. And I'll tell you right now, considering that I have the attention span of a gnat anyway, and that I'm a Bruins fan, it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to do the show and pay attention to this game at the same time.
Stop. You hear his voice, right? Did something happen right there?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's like a roller coaster ride. Like, oh, my God, they almost scored.
They just missed the post, and you could tell your voice went up there. And you're about to go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The only other thing I can say it's going to be like is if you listen the night that I was rooting against Hugh Darvish's perfect game. I know it's Hugh Darvish, but I just like to Americanize him and call him Hugh. And then I just I erupted like a crazed person when it got blown in the bottom of the ninth by the Houston Astros. It's going to be like that, because if the Bruins pull this off again, being down 4-1 in the third period here, I'm going to lose my mind. And if they lose to this inferior Toronto Maple Leafs team, I'm going to get angry and I may have to swear. So be ready on that dump button there, Daryl. Thank you very much. Easy thing for me to do is start off the show tonight and throwing out the question that I'm sure has been asked by just about every single sports radio show throughout the nation today.
Yeah! Yeah, mother... Yeah! 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 Woo! There it is. Holy... Oh, I want to swear so bad. Yeah, James... take that, Reimer, you bum. Wow, what an epic collapse. What an absolute collapse by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Suck it. Wow. Holy. Oh, I want to. Ah. Holy. Wow. Huh? No, that's okay. You can leave it on. I'll have the restraint here not to swear. Wow, you have to feel like the biggest DB if you walked out of that place at 4-1. Holy crap. Wow, the Bruins just won it 5-4 in overtime. Who was that got the game-winning goal? Whew, wow. Again, nothing like Game 7 overtime hockey. This is a roller coaster ride that... who had this?
Bergeron!
Wow. Oh, my God. Wow, that's exciting. Holy
God. Murray, I love it.
Yeah! Patrice Bergeron that got that goal?
It was, dummy. Yep.
I love how you immediately, true Boston fashion, you immediately start attacking that. Oh, Reimer, you bum. Oh, what a collapse.
But
you
he was.
Suck it.
What a puddle. That's as Toronto Maple Leafs as it gets. The funny thing is that, you know, thankfully, that whole thing.
Take that, Reimer, you bum.
That blatant unprofessionalism on the air is what helped, you know, help guide me back here, because you have no idea how I got raked over the coals the next day by my angry boss.
Oh, my God. Ugh. What does he care?
Oh, no one cares about hockey down here. Nobody cares about Boston sports and rah, rah, rah. I got yelled at on a daily basis at that show.
It was 11 o'clock at night,
right?
On
like,
a
no
freaking
cares.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably the most passionate that station's ever had was you on it
that's,
for that
moment. That's true.
Anyway, okay, so we did relive that a little
reset
bit last
time
night.
And temperature.
It's 3:56 here on the Sports Hub. Back to your phones. Here's Martin on the Cape. Go ahead, Martin.
Mike, I would think of all the major sports, there has to be some way to pull off a golf tournament with no fans. I mean, it's the ultimate solo sport. You would, I can see...
Yes, Martin, you would figure. You would figure.
You know, I can see the team sports. We have all that contact and contact with a ball. Logistically, it's kind of unsafe and reasonably out of the question right now. I know that the blood sports, hunting and fishing, will be on with a vengeance this year. But other than that, I just don't see how you could pull off any playoffs safely. I'm surprised they didn't do Wimbledon with bleached balls, sanitary balls or something. I would think maybe that.
Well, we'll get back to the other sports in a second. Golf, you would figure. Okay, no fans, so no gallery. And then you whack the support staff. You know,
down to 10%.
Oh, right. Bring them one out of ten people that you would normally have. You tell them to stay home. Really, what else do you need? So you have the cameramen who are distanced. You have the announcers up in the platforms.
Yep.
The stages. Okay, they're sort of distanced. You have the golfers and their caddies, and you have one marshal per group. And you, I mean. They should be able to
golf,
do that.
You should be able to do, especially when, I mean, not in this state, but I know, like, at least my friends in the South, like, golf courses are still open. So if that's happening, like, you should be able to have the, you know, PGA still going on.
So I do wonder if we were mentioned this before. Wimbledon is talking about canceling, not postponing, because apparently they can't grow their grass at other times of year, which is just wild to me.
Right.
But it is on grass and it doesn't grow in the fall or something like that. I'm sure someone will correct me if I have that kind of wrong, but I thought I had heard that they have a grass growing issue. The Masters should be in the fall, except they get kind of stuffy about their golf course. And the reason they have it when they do is because that's when the course pops, all those flowers bloom, and it's the most telegenic time of the year there in that part of the country and on that golf course. That's why they have it so early in April. In the fall, there's no flowers, the azaleas, blah, 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 like all that stuff.
Yeah, there's been the overhead shots of what the course looks like in the fall, and it's all, you know, basically looks like burnt dead grass.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and so they're like, no, we can't possibly. Use green spray paint. Figure it out.
Exactly. Green screen the thing. Like, what? So Augusta, is this true? Augusta's considering canceling because they don't think it's going to look good on television?
Yeah, and that it would be, they would deem it unplayable. But
I think it's
more about the aesthetics than anything else.
Unplayable, my ass. They used to. When I was a kid, they never used to televise the front nine because the front nine wasn't as telegenic. You would always pick up.
Oh, no kidding.
On hole 9 or 10. Yeah, you never used to televise the front nine of the Masters because it wasn't the same. Very, very particular about their golf course down there. Joe and Melrose on the Patriots. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
All right. So I think the Patriots are looking at a rebuilding, 1 year rebuilding or retooling year, whatever you want to call it, like similar to like 2009. I mean, with Van Noy going and Collins going, you have to see if Juwan Bentley and Chase Winovich can play and pick up the slack. You have to find out if Jared Stidham can play. And what I would do is take anyone that's over 30 years old and trade them for like second, third round picks, particularly like Edelman. I mean, you have a 34-year-old receiver. He's not going to be there when you're ready to win again. So, and just be 2021.
Okay.
So that's what I would do going forward.
All right. If you get a second for Edelman, that's a fair return, a second or a third.
I think that's high, but considering his age and the beating he's taken.
I don't think he'll get it.
No.
Right. I don't think he'll get it.
No.
And so, you know, here's the deal. When you talk about guys that they would want to clear for cap space, they're not saving them enough to go get a difference maker for a player. Right? All it is just clearing room for your draft picks or other sort of middling moves, which I think they can do without letting their good players go. In other words, I'm just keeping everyone in contending this year. He said 2009. I'd be happy with the 2009 kind of year. Not the finish. You know, that was a gutless quitter team by the end of the year. They had lost the locker room, and that was a, you know, so I didn't like the finish, but I think they were 10-6 and they hosted a playoff game.
Correct. Yeah.
So if that's a down year, if you're 10-6 and host a playoff game this year,
with someone not named Tom Brady as your quarterback, I would take that.
That's a win. And then you go into next year, you have all that money to spend. You've you'll have more draft picks. Your quarterback will have had some success, whoever it is, and you're sort of off and running. That to me, I think that's a good year. I would want that to happen. I don't want them to strip it bare to the point where they're going 4-12. And so what? You have a couple extra draft picks, but now your quarterback has gone 4-12, and you have to start over there. And I don't know.
They're not going to, and you know that.
I'm not like, doing that.
With Bill Belichick at the helm and the talent that they still have, it's not going to happen. But he's chasing Don Shula for that wins record. They're not going to tank it.
Real quick, James in the car on that Bruins-Leafs game. Go ahead, James.
This is for my girlfriend and Murray. Bergeron! Bergeron! F you!
It's Bergeron. How come people didn't know that? Again, the clip that Stu likes to play of me, it's Bergeron! Bergeron! But I'm mic'd up there with Amonte on NBC Sports Boston getting ready to do the post-game show, so that's me off mic watching the game. That's my reaction while watching the game.
I was watching
it. Bergeron.
So I was watching on like a 13-inch television that was about 10-15 feet away. My eyesight's not that good as it is, so that's why I was like, and it's not like I'm listening to the feed of the game, so it was a little difficult for me.
Yeah, it was orgasmic.
Oh, it was a great night.
Sportsgasm. So we start off the show talking about Kevin Paul DuPont.
Patrice Bergeron that got that goal?
Kevin Paul DuPont's column on Sunday in the Globe. Not that we're bashing him. It's a fair opinion. We just disagree with it. It says, time for the NHL and NBA to call it a season. Enough, no more. Shut it down, he says. which I just strongly disagree with for many reasons. We can reset that and give you the NFL's plan, which I think is diametrically opposed, which is just the exactly the opposite of what Kevin Paul DuPont is talking about. We'll pick that up in 90 seconds after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.